Hello and welcome to today's podcast. This is episode 199, and as you can see by the title, we're going to be talking about the psychology of public speaking. And I think this is really important because many times people who get into public speaking, they're very good at providing stories and they are an actual great speaker. And I have a personal opinion and belief that yes, it's important to be a good speaker. You do need to sound good. But personally, I don't think it's the most important part. You've probably heard quite a general phrase, especially if you're someone who's entrepreneurial like mindset and you are a big believer in success. You've probably heard the phrase, all the skills and abilities in the world and the incorrect mindset and you'll lose every time. And I believe that to be the most true with public speaking. Now, when you talk about mindset, what that typically entails from a universal perspective is important components such as discipline, work ethic, patience, good judgment, focus, memory. All these things are, in my personal opinion, the most important factors of public speaking. And I think it's very important to get the right narrative while delivering a speech, which I'll tell you a bit more about later on. So in this episode, I'm just going to give you some general psychological advantages that will help you upgrade your public speaking. And the reason why this is important is because I do believe that some people do have an advantage in the way they speak. I do think that you can improve your voice, you can definitely improve your body language, your hand gestures and facial expressions and whatnot. But of course, some people with their accents and the way they speak is quite unique and you can't change it. And depending on how you sound, you may be more attractive or less attractive to your audience. And you should definitely focus on improving your voice, especially if it's not that good, or especially if you're aware of it yourself, that your voice isn't at the highest quality that it could be. And again, we can talk a bit more about that, how you can improve that in the future. But I just want to mainly focus on the psychology. Now, the first and most important point of psychology is to understand that the audience is the most important part. Before you go into any speech, even if you're getting called up by a company and you haven't had time to speak to the people there, you still need to know a little bit about the people in that community. And this is why it's important to research. For example, let's say that you're going to do a speech to a youth club or a school. What you'll want to do is research into that company, understand their values, understand what activities they do, understand what the age group is, understand what type of people may go there. Sometimes it may say in the actual youth club description of school, for example, the type of students and people who go there. It may be people who have behavioral issues, maybe people who have anxiety issues, maybe people who go there to make new friends. And all of those details will give you narratives and viewpoints on what these people are like. It is a much smarter idea to go and see those people first. So what you might want to do, and this is typically what a lot of speakers do, is they will email or message the youth advisor or whoever is in charge of that community. And you send a nice email, you say hello, or you say, Dear X, I've written this email to you in interest in giving you an inspirational talk based on X. Da, 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 da. And essentially what you want to do in that email is make it all about showing how you're going to exemplify their values. You're going to demonstrate how their values are connected to the way you think. So for example, if you believe in boosting confidence and having fun and working hard towards something, and that community shares that values, you want to amplify that and put as much interest as that in your speech, because it's going to resonate with them. And once you understand that, once you send the email, if they accept it, the first thing you want to do is speak to the advisor and have a general conversation with some of the people there. Now, remember, if you're starting early in public speaking and you haven't got your business and you haven't made it big, because I will be honest with you that credibility and extreme adversity are the two biggest factors that will grant you great success in the public speaking. And this is something that I'm working towards. You know, I haven't gone through any extreme adversity, at least from what I'm aware of, and I don't have enough or anywhere near enough credibility to be making loads of money off corporate speeches. So I'm not going to focus on that now. All I care about is just talking. I'm not motivated by the money. I'm motivated by giving speeches, speaking to people, and gaining a general understanding of who they are, what their values are, and what their motivations are. And the power in this is once you understand their motivations, their beliefs, what you can do is something called an anchor technique, or also another way to describe it is something known as problem amplify solve. This is something that my mentor taught me. And essentially what you do is, let's say for example, they place great significance on their time. You can make a speech about the importance of working hard towards your goal and not wasting time on things which don't go towards your goal. For example, let's say you have a group of young people and they're constantly gaming or having unhealthy food or never doing their homework. So they're displaying habits of the opposite of what you need to be successful. What you can do is amplify the concerns of doing those bad habits. So let's say, for example, if you keep on having unhealthy food, having bad drinks, gaming too much, not attending school, not doing your homework, what will happen is in the future, you will struggle with getting work. Those habits may lead to addictions, which can lead you on to other bad things. You got to be careful with the age. Don't be talking about addictions to young people. Just say that, for example, it will make you struggle with work, may make you struggle with relationships, and may affect your health, so you're not as energetic as you used to be. You could say something like, remember guys, I know that you're young. I know that you are able to have loads of energy, but when you're older, and you could make a joke about yourself or something, when you're old like me, you're not going to be as energetic as you used to be. So you can have an odd snack every now and then, but remember to always exercise, to eat healthy, or at least reasonably healthy at your age. Maybe you're able to get away with it at your age. Just remember that your health is your wealth. And the reason why it's your health is because it gives you great energy. It gives you great high levels of fortitude, which means you're very robust, you're very healthy, you're very vibrant. And you can use that towards your work, you can use that in your relationships, or any business that you desire to try in the future. So you have the problem, they've got the bad habits, you amplify the worry of that, so you do want to place some fear into them. Right? Essentially, all motivation is fear. So you fear the audience, make them aware that if you keep on doing those bad habits, your life's only going to get harder. But you then say that the solution to this is that you start small. So you have some small habits, you slowly build up, and eventually over time, you realize that you're becoming not only a better person, but those bad habits aren't dictating your life. So the first rule, and then probably the most important rule of psychology, is you have to understand the audience. You want to understand their fears, their desires, their deepest problems, what they're doing in their life, any trouble in past events which they're comfortable to tell you, right? And just have a general interest in them. In Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, he wrote that the best way to be interesting is to be interested. I'll say it again. The best way to be seen as interesting is to be interested. So you first need to show great interest in the other person. You actually care. This is something that a lot of people are doing the opposite today. We live in a world of social media, people very much caring about themselves and worrying about their lives. And the problem with that is that in order to definitely make friends and build close relationships, you do have to show interest in the other person. Otherwise, why should they talk to you? And the hope is that there's some reciprocation there where they will be nice and do nice things to you. And that's usually how a friendship or bond builds. So make sure to have interest in other people first. For example, I've got a friend now who's releasing their first book. He's a relationship coach, actually. And he's doing really well with his partner. And he's released out a book at the moment. And I just gave him a very simple message saying, well done, it's amazing that you've done this. Even something like a small message like that does go a long way. Because again, it shows that you care. Okay, the second psychological advantage is to not perceive anything the way you want to see it. But whatever the situation is what it is. You probably heard that quote in more of a humorous way of a meme, for example. But often we go into situations and we already determine what happens by our own viewpoint, right? You've probably heard the example of the lens. I won't give that as an example, but maybe another example is a filter, right? Say, for example, if you watch a film and it's in 3D, right? You know that you're not going to see something like that in reality, right? What you see on film will never happen, or the way it's even seen on that film, you'll never see that through reality. You just see things for what they are, right? And what you have to be careful with is sometimes our emotions at a very unconscious level can be so dictating and so clouding of our minds that we form these perceptions which to us feel very surreal. I'll give you an example, and you'll probably know this from your own experience. Have you ever been, maybe you've gone to a shop or your local pharmacy and you're talking to the worker there, and maybe when she's talking to you, she gives you a weird look with her eye, or to you, it looks like she's looking at you disappointed or something. Now, you may perceive that as she not liking you, and you may think, well, if she doesn't like me, why should I be nice to her? Why should I ask how her day is, right? Why should I show any interest? I should just go there, not bother about it, just take my stuff and go. Or maybe I should be angry. Maybe I should report her or something, right? Maybe that's a bit too extreme. But what happens is we build all these narratives, not by what happens, but by what we think is with it. What we think happened. This is also known as something as confirmation bias, right? Lots of people have this. This is actually a trait of narcissism as well, right? Sometimes, and this is a backlash of learning new things, reading books, when you gain a lot of intellect, you tend to think you know everything. And the know everything mindset is by far one of the worst mindsets you can have. I think there's something that my mentor told me, which is, unless you practice it, unless you've experienced it, unless you've tested that knowledge, you don't properly know it. Right? You probably read a book and it gives you a viewpoint and it says, stop reading the book now and practice what we've told you. Be honest with yourself. How many times you've done that? Or maybe you've just skipped a page or gone to the next page or just kept reading, right? So if you have done that, that is a obvious psychological habit that you have. You have a tendency to judge situations by how you see it. And there's many deep reasons behind it. A lot of it has to do with past memories. But just to focus on this, one thing I will say is that if you're having a conversation with someone, unless they actually say something rude, don't perceive it being that way. See the conversation for what it is, not what you think it is. And the reason why this is important is because if you go into a speech, right, there's going to be loads and loads of people there, right? Say, for example, you're speaking in front of 100 people and it's your first speech. If you look at 10 people, right, and you see them having maybe disappointed or angry faces, right, and, but then you see 90 other people and they're all happy or they're all looking in just interest and amazement, are you just going to focus on all the negative faces? And even then, you can't read their mind. So how do you know they're actually angry? It may be an indication, but doesn't prove that they're angry. Right? So this is why you need to be extremely careful and understand your own beliefs, understand your thinking patterns. What that would also mean is that if you did do that, you're developing something known as a negative bias. Right? It's pretty self-explanatory, but what it means is that in a whole situation, right, no matter what positive arises, you will always focus on the negative. You probably know someone who they could go on an all-inclusive five-star holiday and they would still find loads of things to be unhappy about. Right, my advice is stay away from people like that. And maybe there are situations where you can't do that. Maybe it's like your mother or a family member or something, which I understand people have that. But again, do not let it affect you. Right, it's not even better to have a more positive view. You can develop something called toxic positivity, where you know you develop too many positive thoughts and you will always look at the positive outcome. And again, this is another form of narcissism as well. What narcissism do is no matter what the outcome is, even if they fail constantly, they will always look at the positives, and to them, they will perceive it as success. So, and a lot of this comes down to the fear of judgment, the fear of, you know, not being good enough. So you need to see things for what they are, and you need to actually have a balance of both negative and positive views. That's actually a healthy way to look at it, right? When you look at things for both the negative and the positive, and in some situations there might be one more than other, but you want to try and make it as a balanced perception as possible. But for example, when you go into a speech, when I go into a speech, when I see people, it doesn't matter to me what faces are being pulled or anything. Or again, it's just in my mind. I'm there to give a speech. I'm there to help impact the audience, help inspire them, help motivate them. I'm not concerned who pulls any faces or what anyone says. It doesn't matter. Because what's actually happened is just your mind playing tricks on you. Again, it's just memories and beliefs which formulate, and they make you think this is happening in real life, but it's not. It's all happening in your mind. That's number two. Make sure to see things for what it is, not what you think it is. Okay, the third psychological advantage is rhetoric. I love rhetoric. This is something I really love. This is probably one of the best advantages, and it works for things like political debates, but pretty much universally all debates. Now, this is also something that politicians don't do. And sometimes they can still be successful or be very convincing in their debates because they tend to use very con artistry type psychological advantages. Of course, I'm not going to tell you to use con artistry in public speaking. I wouldn't want you to do that, and it's not a good long-term solution. But the art of rhetoric essentially means it's a very logical, rational mindset approach, which is to only incorporate evidence and fact-based viewpoints in your speaking. What does that mean? Let's say you have a particular belief. Let's say you have an opinion based on climate change something. Maybe you're against climate change, right? And let's say you're debating X person and you're trying to, the way to win this argument for yourself is to gain as much evidence as possible to support your belief, right? And there's multiple ways to do this. Okay, the first way is you need credibility. right, you probably hear of the law of credibility, right? This is one of the most fundamental credibilities, right? It's what I said earlier, actually, right? The two most important parts of public speaking to get more and higher paid speeches is to be more, it's either to be extremely credible, so you're well known, you've had a lot of success, you've had a lot of money, or you've gone through extreme adversity. So maybe you were homeless and now you're a millionaire. Maybe you were morbidly obese and now you've got a six pack, right? You want to have that. But what you can do in terms of information is you want to get as many sites as you can which support a claim or statement you're trying to make. And you also want to provide stats. You want to show what is progressing. Because remember what we said, the problem amplifies solve. If you're trying to prove that climate change is a severe issue, you want to show stats which worry people first. Then you want to amplify that. So, for example, you could talk about the future impacts on the world. And then you want to provide solutions. And what you can also do is provide other scientific resources of what approaches to take to solve that issue, which again would just give you more credibility. The other thing is the person who writes the blogs, right? A person who's maybe had 30 years of scientific research on climate change is more than likely going to have more knowledge on climate change than a university student. So you want to really know who's writing the articles, because again, we all have knowledge to an extent, but some people have better and more knowledge than others. So why wouldn't you want to have this? Another point is you have to be more careful of what you say, because again, if you say a statement and it's not backed by anything, you instantly make yourself vulnerable. What can happen is when the other person, and I've seen this in many debates as well, what can happen is the other person can write down a stat which they know is not true from their research and say to themselves, well, hang on, that stat isn't true. I know it's not true. Can you prove that it is? Then if you don't have any evidence to back this up, then essentially you're losing the debate, and that looks really, really bad in a political standpoint, from a public speaking standpoint. So making sure you have that data is really, really important. You also don't want to make it too logical, right? If it's too logical, it just sounds boring. So again, you can have stories. So maybe you can have stories of traumatic events in climate change, maybe like the polar ice Alps mountain. Or maybe you could say about the rising sea levels, or you could say about the high temperature, right? And then what you want to do is make very small, but lots and lots and lots of stories. So you want to give basically small stories. So you, for example, you could say in Greenland, the polar ice caps have melted in 2017 by 30%. I'm just making this up. And then you could quickly say, in Australia, the heat has increased by, say, 20 degrees. And in 2018 alone, in a small village named Arkansas, a astonishing amount of 2,000 people died, right? Again, I'm just making up stuff, but you get the idea. The point is that you create small mini stories and make it as many as you can, say for it in a 2-minute time frame, because if you have those stories, it builds up more credibility that what you're saying is indeed true. Because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to convince the audience that what you're saying is true, so that they can enjoy it, so that they can join you on your side and build your votes. So whatever statement or belief you want to impose, it can become true. Okay, another point for rhetoric is you want to make sure your vocabulary is good. Now, I do think it's important to have a mix of good vocabulary and simple vocabulary, depending on the audience. If I was debating high politicians or scientists or businessmen, right, these people are most particularly high IQ. So you want to use very high vocabulary to test against them. Remember, a debate is almost like a public speaking war. You want to make sure that your vocabulary is so intense that it almost discombobulates them. Right? You actually want to do that. If you're giving a speech to maybe a high school, definitely a youth club, or maybe even a university, you want to really be careful with the vocab, right? Because what happens, and I've experienced this while in school as well, is when people give terms and words that I just don't understand, and that ends me, and that ends it with me not actually understanding the teachings they're giving, right? But when it comes to any sort of political debate or public speaking debate, especially if it's a competition, don't worry. The best vocab helps in this situation. There's actually free courses. I think there's free courses from Harvard, actually, that there's even an online business course from Harvard. There's even a coding course from Harvard. There's lots of courses Harvard had. But there's one Harvard course on the art of rhetoric, which anyone can have completely for free. I highly, highly recommend you have a look. Yeah, so that's the main psychological advantages to give you in public speaking and to drastically improve your public speaking sphere. So I'll just reiterate again. The first one is you want to understand the audience. This is the most important part of public speaking, right? Ignore everything else. If you don't master this one thing, nothing else in your public speaking artillery matters. The second point is you want to make sure that you master your perception, and you master your perception by seeing things for what they are, not what you think they are. Right? We don't want to have any confirmation. We don't want to have any biases, right? We don't want to make false impressions in our head just from people's body language, right? Even if it is true, even if it isn't, it's going to make it harder in your speech. So carry on with what you're doing, carry on with your knowledge, and see things for what they are, not what they think they are. Unless people give any negative or judgmental comments against you, which is obviously dismaying your ability, then you can make any comments you like. But even then, you need to learn to be disciplined. You need to learn to sort of take criticism, right? Taking criticism, taking judgment is actually a very good thing. It helps you build a backbone, but it will make you a stronger public speaker, because when you get rejection, when you get failure, which is inevitable, it's not going to affect you that bad. So be careful, be aware of this, and see things for what they are, not what you think they are. And the third point, and I really like this because this is actually a methodology from many hundreds of years ago. I think it was from the ancient Greek philosophers who made this, which is the art of rhetoric. This is something that Socrates and Plato used in their speaking. And that's why they were well known. Socrates was well known for his village in Greece. I believe he was from Athens, where he would use evidence, use facts, use testing, which is very interesting at that time because it wasn't very common in debates. And that's how he would often win. So using logic, using rationality with a bit of emotion, having stories in there is what can make you a much, much more effective speaker. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. I think I've given you a lot of knowledge there. But take this episode, study it, train it, and hopefully boost your public speaking. I'll leave it here. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure again. Episode 199, 200 mark. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for that to come. I hope you have a good day. Take care, and goodbye for now.